This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. On today's show, it's a housing boom. But for whom? All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and this week we are talking housing. Seems everywhere you look and listen and read, there are stories about just how hot, just how booming our current housing market is.
It is a seller's market.
But big changes like low mortgage rates and remote working, creating a thriving housing market.
And more people are willing to pay more than the asking price.
Is this a housing bubble? And if so, when will it burst?
But for people who want to buy a home and are getting priced out, or for renters, it's a whole different story. Turns out millions of Americans are close to eviction or foreclosure right now. By some measures, about 1 in 4 renters have missed at least one rent payment since last March. In December, Congress passed a stimulus package that includes $45 billion in rental assistance. But just this week, a judge overturned a federal eviction moratorium that was supposed to be in place until June 30th. So the headlines don't tell the whole story. The housing market is not just one big boom right now. It's actually a sort of best of times, worst of times situation. To clear up some housing misconceptions, we called up Jerusalem Dimsis. She's a policy reporter at Vox.
I feel like it's one of those things where I tell people I cover housing, they're like, okay, bye. And then I'm like, no, but it's actually very interesting.
I wanted Jerusalem to unpack 3 big myths about our current housing market. One, that we're all in a housing boom. As stated, that is not quite the case. Two, that this housing boom is just like the last one in the late 2000s. It's not at all. And three, that pervasive myth of the wealthy Silicon Valley tech bro moving to, say, Kansas. Not quite. First myth, we are in a housing boom. Not exactly, not for everyone. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing here is how you define a housing boom. It's definitely the case that the market is incredibly hot, hotter than it's ever been. But what that means is that prices are really high. They've been skyrocketing over the last year. And that means that if you are a homeowner, that's really great for you. Between September 2019 and September 2020, homeowners got $1 trillion in additional home equity.
No, they did it. Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. Yeah. So if you're a homeowner, it's been a good year for you, mostly. And then there are, you know, everyone else. There are people. Yeah. I mean, the majority of Americans are homeowners. It's around 64% of our homeowners. So it's a lot of people. But then you look at people who are trying to be homeowners. For those people, it's been a really hard year. Because of that, that means that you're seeing pretty wild anecdotes come about. Things like people lining up the night before to see an open house, people putting in offers, $50,000, $100,000 above asking price. You're seeing people waive inspections. And so there are all these things that are happening that make it really hard for buyers.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of Americans who are renters, obviously. And for them, it's been a different story.
So this is what's interesting. You've reported on this. It's actually gotten worse for renters in the midst of this housing boom. For some low-income renters, their rents have gone up over the last year.
Yeah. So if you look at urban cores in general, right, you're looking at places like San Francisco and New York City. At the high end, all these higher income units, these luxury units, are decreasing in rent. And that's happening because those people, there's a lot of them who are deciding, like, you know, they want to buy a house, or they were like, there's no point in me living in the middle of a city when I can't enjoy any of the urban amenities during a pandemic. So they moved to the suburbs, or they went to go stay with their parents or other different things. So that decreased the demand pressure on the higher end units. But at the lower end, it's a different story. Right? Because the people who actually experienced the greatest financial difficulties due to the pandemic were people who are predominantly renters and predominantly low-income renters. That means that at the lower end, all these people are feeling financial pressure. And what happens when you feel that kind of pressure? You try to downsize, which means you move to a lower income unit or a lower rent unit, and you try to maybe double up with other people. That means there's more demand happening in the lower end of the market. And that in turn means that those people are actually seeing their rent stay the same, which was already untenable for them, or even increase in specific instances.
Yeah. All right. Myth number two, this housing boom is just like 2008.
Yeah.
It's not. Explain.
Sure. I think that the biggest thing to understand about 2008 and what happened in the housing market is that you had a lot of people who were suddenly unable to make their mortgage payments, they were defaulting, and that created a crisis. What we have now is something very different. After 2008, there were a lot more stringent requirements put on who could actually qualify for a mortgage. So like the median FICO score for purchasing a home is actually 45 points higher now. And even like a much,
really?
Yeah, even much bigger than that, like the lower bound of creditworthiness to even qualify for a mortgage. So these are like the bottom 10% of people who could qualify for a mortgage. It's at like 657 points. That's before the recession, it was like 600. That's a pretty good credit score. That means that people,
that is.
Yeah. So people who are getting homes right now, these are not people who are going to default on their debt. That also means you're cutting out a lot of people from ever being able to access home ownership. Mm. And the way that we define creditworthiness is not always fair. It doesn't include a lot of things that could indicate that you are a responsible borrower, you're a responsible renter, and that disproportionately impacts lower income and Black and Brown Americans. And so, you know, while we're not going to see this kind of massive default, which is a good thing, it's not a good thing that the way that we got there was by cutting out large swaths of the population.
I've been thinking about buying a home for years, and what's really frustrating is that, like, I've probably saved more money than I ever have during this pandemic year of not going out and doing anything.
Yeah.
But now it's seems almost dumber than ever to try to buy a house when everything's like 20% over what it should be.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
Yeah. It really depends where you are. There are conflicting arguments about whether it actually makes sense at this point to be buying a home because people are being forced to compromise on a lot of things they probably wouldn't have compromised on before, like certain features or amenities or locations that they definitely wanted because they're just so desperate to buy a house. At the same time, just to be clear, like the mortgage rates here are just absolutely incredible that we're seeing. And like, this is the kind of like money saving that will allow you to build even more wealth long term if you are able to get a house that you're happy with. But you know, if you buy a house, you're locked in there for a little bit in order to not lose money on all the transaction costs that come along with it.
All right, this next myth about the current housing market, it's become a pet peeve of mine because I feel like it's just this made up story that we've all glommed onto because like headlines told us to. This idea, this story of the big city tech bro moving to Kansas, that's kind of a myth.
Yeah.
Break that down for us.
Totally. So everyone transport yourselves back to, I guess, May of last year, and everyone's saying like there's an urban exodus, like New York City is empty. And there certainly is an uptick that we've seen in vacation and second home buying, but it's just such a small sliver of what's actually going on. There's recent Postal Service data that basically looks at change of address cards and seeing where people actually moved. And 84% of people actually stayed within the same metro area.
Wait, really?
Yes, 84%. Oh, and then an additional 7.5% were in the same state. That means over 90% of people stayed within the same state that they were already living in after they moved.
Really?
Yeah, and only like 0.28%, I think, left the metro area that they were already in.
So there were more folks probably going from like their studio apartment downtown to maybe like a house in the burbs?
Sure. Yeah. There definitely was a lot of that going on. I think the way that people should think about this is that it wasn't that people all of a sudden changed their minds in the pandemic. It just accelerated decisions they were already going to make. So like if you knew in the next couple of years that you were going to move to this neighborhood downtown that you liked better, or you knew you were going to move to this other suburb because you were trying to have kids soon, you liked that school in that area, you know, it accelerated that timeline because you saw the interest rates, you saw you had the time and the ability to kind of move during the pandemic, but it wasn't all like all of a sudden everyone's preferences suddenly changed.
All right, we have talked about the myths and the problems here, but I also want to talk about any fixes in store for this weird lopsided housing market. What has the government done so far in offering relief for those having housing problems during the pandemic, and how effective has that been?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that the government has done and that was remarkably effective was the eviction moratorium that they put into effect last year. And, you know, that's not only kept so many people in their homes, it's also, as we've seen, kept a lot of people alive. So, I mean, tens of thousands of lives in certain studies have been saved due to these eviction moratoriums.
But here's the thing. Just this week, didn't a judge strike down a federal eviction ban?
Yes. The federal eviction ban has now been struck down a couple of times by different federal judges. Right now, the U.S. government is appealing the decision, and so there's been a stay. But as for right now, the ban is still in effect.
Yeah. You know, when I think of this housing market, there are certain problems that have been exacerbated by mm-hmm. the pandemic, or new problems that have come up because of the pandemic. But even before coronavirus, our housing market nationally was crazy. Mm-hmm. And these issues of availability and affordability have been simmering for a long time. And when it comes to affordability of housing in urban areas, a lot of it comes down to very boring, mundane local decisions mm-hmm. around zoning
yes.
and where you can build what and how big or small it can be. Do you see any energy around really having, I don't know, a national conversation about zoning laws and the rules we have about who gets to build what where? Because
yeah.
that affects the price of housing.
It does. I mean, thank you for bringing that up, because I feel like sometimes people talk about the last year as if this is just an aberration of the market. Like so many things, COVID-19 just really revealed how broken a lot of our systems already were. And with housing, I think that's like a quintessential example of that. For like a decade now, we've actually built fewer homes than we have at any other point in American history since at least the 1960s when we started tracking all of those numbers. So it's a really big problem. And these zoning laws are a big part of that. So zoning rules, as you said, kind of restrict the ability for people to build homes. Some of these laws will say things like, oh, only one house can exist on a single acre. And what we know is that, you know, if you're able to service, you know, 10 or 12 people on that property, that means you have 10, 12 more families able to find housing. And there is some momentum that you're talking about here. We've seen a lot of momentum at the state and local level in certain areas. In North Carolina, there's a bill advancing through the legislature. There are tons of bills advancing in California. And at the national level, Biden on the campaign trail did make a promise to, quote unquote, eliminate exclusionary zoning. So those are kinds of reforms that we're probably going to need to see on a much more widespread scale if we're actually going to get the kind of housing abundance that we need to provide housing for everyone.
Thanks again to Jerusalem Dimsis. She is a policy reporter for Vox. All right, coming up, comedian Ziwei Fumido. She is not afraid of having awkward conversations about race. And now she is taking her chats from Instagram Live to late night TV. You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Today, it seems like everybody's got a bone to pick with the news. So what happens when somebody stops talking smack and just decides to wage all-out war?
First thing you do in an invasion, you eliminate the communications of the enemy.
And what happens if they win? Visit Stockton, California, for a story about a revolt against the mainstream media that's shaken up a city. From NPR's Invisibilia.
Last summer, in the midst of America's racial reckoning, an internet comedian named Ziwei Fumido made a name for herself asking celebrities the most awkward questions about race.
How many black friends do you have, Allison Roman?
Do you define friend like someone who would pick me up from the airport, or like people I follow or people that I know? Because I have, like, I would say 4 to 5 black friends that would pick me up at the airport.
4 to 5? You are the third person to say they have 4 to 5.
Ziwei would get famous people on her Instagram Live, like celebrity chef Allison Roman or actor slash activist Rose McGowan, or playwright Jeremy O'Harris. And with these celebrities, she would turn these almost absurd race questions into these meta commentaries on race in America right now. Z-Way's Instagram Lives were such a hit that she's taking them to TV.
Would you consider yourself a good ally?
I try.
How do you try?
I.
You have a book called Pretty Powerful. Why do you think ugly people can't be powerful?
This weekend, Z-Way's new variety show launches on Showtime. It is called Z-Way. In honor of this show's launch, we are going to revisit right now my conversation with Z-Way from last July. We talk about the art of the interview and Z-Way's comfort with making people uncomfortable. Enjoy. I want to talk about your fascination with discomfort. You've talked about this before. And what I really like that you said that, like, you want white people in this moment, good-hearted white people who think they're trying to do the right thing, you want them to feel as uncomfortable talking about race as black people feel living race every day.
Totally. I mean, every single day of my life, I've experienced racism since I was pulled out of my mother's womb. It's the worst. I hate it. I wish I didn't have to deal with race.
Girl,
right? It's terrible. I wish I didn't have to deal with racism, but it's like, if I'm going to be marginalized every day of my life, then I'll be damned if you don't feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just me kind of reversing. It's me taking my authority and my autonomy and kind of reversing that on a society that's really oppressed me.
Yeah. When did you start doing this ask white people hard questions about race to their face thing? Did it start in high school, in college? Was there a moment where you're like, I'm gonna do this?
So professionally, it started in 2016, but this is my personality trait. For better or worse, it makes me a horrible dinner party guest, but a very funny entertainer. And so I maybe started doing this in high school, where I went to prep school, and I grew up in like a predominantly Latino neighborhood in Lawrence, Massachusetts. And then I went to Andover, which is the opposite of that. It's very, very white, very rich, very affluent. And so I kind of just embraced that experience of feeling like an other all of a sudden, you know, at 14 years old. And I kind of went headfirst into it and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to make people's lives hell. And so I kind of raised hell as a high schooler and would just ask uncomfortable questions because it entertained me. And it gave me joy when otherwise, I might feel sort of excluded.
I want to walk through some of the more awkward moments of the Instagram Live series, but I want to talk about what the transition from a YouTube series to an Instagram Live show, what it meant for the flow of the conversation. I'm assuming a YouTube series, you kind of get to edit everything in post and
yes,
make it have a flow and an arc. With Instagram Live, it's just there.
Oh,
how does that 100%. Change these questions and these conversations?
Well, I think if someone said something egregiously racist during the YouTube production, I would just cut it out because it's like, I don't think anybody is helped from being traumatized this way. Whereas with the Instagram Lives, I have to really be an active listener because it's like, I think you see it most with the Alison Roman interview where I ask her,
what do you qualitatively like about black people?
And she kind of stutters. She's like,
qualitatively, I can say what I like qualitatively about my black friends, or you mean generally speaking?
However you interpret the question.
Qualitatively, I love that their food almost always tastes better than mine.
Okay, we're going to stop you right there.
Way better dancers.
Stop you right there. We're going to stop you. I'm doing you a favor. Okay. And so I don't really give her anything because I want to see what's her natural inclination for that question. Because my point isn't necessarily to get my guests canceled. My point is to show the ways in which in conversation we bring up unconscious biases and we bring up racist backgrounds that we have just by virtue of living in the United States. And so I'm the most happy when I have audience members message me in my DM saying, hey, like, I watched your show and I saw the way that the guests answered questions. And now I'm thinking about the way I would answer those questions. And I realized, like, hey, I'm not perfect and I have a lot to learn. Because Z-Way Fumito, I'm not perfect. I am not the gatekeeper of racism in America. I'm just trying to learn and I'm trying to teach others. And I think that we can grow and heal as a nation if we work together to unlearn racism.
Yes. Yes. Do you think there was something about your upbringing, where you grew up, where you came up, where you went to school, how you were raised, that turned you into the kind of person who is all about asking these kind of questions? Because, like,
I don't know. I'm just as black as you are, and I don't think I have the boldness to do what you're doing, although I love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Do you think a lot about, like, what in your background led you to here?
Yes, I was raised by Nigerian immigrants who are so brutally honest, it hurts. So really, like, what you're seeing in me is just, like, all these different cultures converging into one very sharp and rude and opinionated individual for the benefit yes. of my audience.
I love it. You are everyone's hilarious Nigerian auntie.
Yes, for better or for worse.
What has been the moment in these interviews that has surprised you the most? Or are you ever surprised?
The moment that the show is set up for me to be surprised. I do not know what my guests are ever going to say, and I'm constantly shocked. I was really surprised to see the trend of 4 to 5 black friends. That was surprising.
That is a weird thing to me.
Yeah, because, well, you know why it was surprising is because the first time I experienced it, I didn't think anything of it. And then you get to the second and third time and you're like, you start to realize, oh, this is actually a social trend. And it reflects like a greater discomfort to say, hey, I don't have any black friends, or I have more than 5 black friends. This is like a number I'm going to throw out to feel comfortable. I mean, to look really politically correct. So that really I find so compelling. But truly everything about the interview surprises me.
Yeah.
The fact that my guests say yes surprises me, but it delights me.
Yeah. Okay, so I gotta ask, even though I'm never gonna be on your Instagram show because I'm too scared, what would be your gotcha question for me?
What would be the gotcha question? I think I would ask you about you. So I listened to your Jeremy O'Harris interview before I interviewed Jeremy O'Harris.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course. It was really, really riveting. But my biggest question would be, why didn't black women come up more in that interview?
Ooh. Yeah. And I think the answer would be, I need to do some self-reflection on the ways that I speak to and talk about issues pertinent to black women in my work.
Wow, look at us growing and healing in real time.
Listen, growing. Growing.
Darling, honey. Look at me like a little sprout in the sun, honey.
Yes. Oh my God, I love it.
That was comedian Ziwe Fumido. We spoke last July. You can catch her new show called Ziwe, May 9th on Showtime. Up next, I bring on Ari Shapiro and Audie Cornish, hosts of All Things Considered. Their show is 50 this week, as is NPR itself. We'll discuss that and also play a little game of Who Said That. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy. Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how her team makes an impact.
We always do what we like to think of as actionable science. So the work that we do makes its way to things like nutrition and physical activity guidelines for cancer.org, where millions of people come each year to learn about how they can better prevent cancer.
To learn more, go to cancer.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside. This message comes from NPR sponsor Progressive, and it's Name Your Price tool. Say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show coverage options within your budget. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and for this week's game of Who Said That, I am joined by two people, two friends, two colleagues who were celebrating this week two birthdays. Ari Shapiro, Audie Ooh. Cornish, hello, how are you?
So good to be here.
Tell us the birthdays.
Oh, you mean our show's birthday?
We look amazing for the age of 50. Our show, All Things Considered, celebrated its 50th anniversary this week, and so did NPR.
Yeah, this is a pretty big deal. How are y'all celebrating?
Well, they sent us sweatpants that say
sweatpants
All Things
and champagne.
Considered and champagne. Though, okay. For the record, it was cava.
Audie is the kind of woman who will tell you that champagne only comes from the Champagne region of France.
No, I'm just saying it was cava, and don't at me, anyone who hears this, okay? It's like I have worked to know the difference.
Yeah. I was thinking in advance of this conversation, I have been listening to All Things Considered for a very long time. I love the show, but I've never figured out if that theme song has lyrics. Does it?
No, the Morning Edition theme song did. The All Things Considered theme song. To my knowledge, maybe they exist and I've never heard of them, but you know the Morning Edition lyrics, right? I realize we're here to talk about our show, All Things Considered, but...
Tell us.
It's something like, I hate to get up in the morning. Please don't wake me up this morning. I just want to stay in bed. Or something like that. I swear to God, this is real.
Yeah. That was nice.
That was great. Today I learned.
All right, then on that note, as a last challenge before we play Who Said That, I am welcoming either of you to riff up some ATC theme song lyrics right now on the fly.
Take it away, Audie.
I can't remember. How does our song go? Bum, 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 bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum, bum. Yeah. Give it some lyrics.
This hasn't changed since 1980. Somebody send us a new theme.
So when I was leaving my job as London correspondent, my producer, Rich Preston, said ATC needed a new theme song because he said the current theme song sounded like, I'm a middle-aged parent picking up my children before I get some groceries.
Not wrong. I see no lies there.
No lies.
We like the theme song, and we, you know, it doesn't have lyrics, but that's okay, because we welcome our listeners to fill in the blanks. It's a two-way conversation.
Nice save.
You're welcome.
On that note, let's play Who Said That. I'm not going to say Ari Shapiro has the advantage here, but he has, I believe, at this point, both played Who Said That and hosted it and been the quizmaster.
In anticipation of this, I've studied the last several years of Who Said That's and examined the topics that occur most frequently and the voices that recur. So I feel very prepared. I've got a spreadsheet in front of me.
Wow. Okay.
None of that is true. By the way, none of that is true.
It sounded very.
It sounded so convincing.
Part of our job is to sound convincing. That's literally in the job description.
That's true.
All right. Here is the first quote. As you know, there are no buzzers, no timers. I'm bad at keeping score. Just yell the answer out. Tell me, Ari and Audie, who said this? Here it is. Naveen, why did you unmatch me? It's me.
Is that from, like, The Circle, the Netflix show?
No, it is.
Yo, Ben Affleck.
Yes, Ben
Talking
Affleck.
Talking about a lady who matched with him on Raya.
What is it? Raya?
Well, Raya. I don't know what it is, because I'm not
it's
famous.
It's like Tinder for influencers.
It's famous people Tinder.
No.
And this woman, I guess, like, posts... Well, I actually don't know the story. I just saw Ben Affleck's face saying this. Do you know the story?
Here's the full story. That quote, Naveen, why did you unmatch me? It's me. It comes from Ben Affleck. And that video from Ben Affleck ended up in a TikTok from user Naveen J. She posted that video of Ben Affleck saying that to her with the caption, thinking about the time I matched with Ben Affleck on Raya and thought it was fake. So I unmatched and he sent me a video on Instagram.
Naveen, why did you unmatch me? It's me.
And it's just, I don't know, it's just a whole bunch of, like, divorced dad vibes from Ben Affleck.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Listen, I actually felt bad for him because that's the whole point of having this, like, dumb fancy people Tinder, right? So that you like don't have embarrassing interactions with people who just like clout chase. Sorry, not sorry.
You think there are no catfishers on Raya or Raya or whatever it's called?
I just think that like it must be hard to date when you're famous.
Poor Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, no slack. I'm not cutting
listen,
Ben Affleck, no slack.
Listen, trust me, I'm from Boston. I never thought I would be saying this, but I just think dating is hard. And
dating
I can't imagine doing it in a scenario where people like want to turn you into a joke.
You've, Audie, I didn't think this was possible, but you've made me feel sorry for Ben Affleck.
I will say, I don't know why I care so much about Ben Affleck's personal life. I'm not sure I like any of his movies that much. But the other week, when he was rumored to have, like, had a secret meeting with J-Lo.
What?
The Sam of, like, the early 2000s was, like, giddy and
first
Googling
of all,
everything
how
about it.
Was it if it was in the tabs? And she was sitting in the window in a car that did not have tinted windows. Help me out. Yeah. Come on,
oh,
Sam.
You know all the details of this story.
No, I'm just saying, we know how celebs work the tabs.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, those two who happen to see each other.
In front of a camera.
And,
I just
bring
don't
in the
know
skeptical
why
journalist's eye.
Think
Audie
about
Cornish.
It. So let's say you just got put on blast by Naveen. How are you going to bounce back?
J-Lo. Take that, Naveen.
Who also needs a bounce back? Mm-hmm. Somebody who just,
you
know.
J-Lo does not need a bounce back. J-Lo
lost,
is doing just fine.
Had yet another engagement fallout.
Yes. Wow, you are really up to speed on your celeb gossip.
I am just saying, let us all put on our thinking caps and think politically. How does that story look?
Mm-hmm. There you go. There
on the next
go.
Season of Embedded.
Oh, my God. All right.
Oh, my God.
Audie, you get that first point. Here is the next quote. Tell me who said it. Can you show the light? Would I ever go into this lighting for no reason? No. Who said that? A famous diva who got her second dose this week.
I mean, I can name a bunch of famous divas, but I have no idea who that one is.
Just start naming famous divas.
Well, the thing is, when you talk lighting, it makes me think Mariah. Like, who
yes,
cares about their...
Yes.
Wait,
oh my
did
gosh.
You just... Is it Mariah?
I just guessed that.
Wow. Audie,
I just guessed. Listen,
wow.
Mariah knows her this... angles.
It yes. says something about us that you were thinking Mariah and I was thinking Barbara.
Both
I was going
divas.
Like Bette, Barbara, Liza. Like, that's where my head was at. Those are my divas. Let's be honest.
So this quote from Mariah Carey comes from a video she posted to her Instagram feed on Tuesday showing her getting the second dose of her coronavirus vaccine.
Part two.
And she did this video and showed the nasty fluorescent light overhead in the video to address the conspiracy theory that she had faked getting her first dose. So to set people straight, she has this video of her second dose, shows the light, and says,
would I ever go into this lighting for no reason? No.
You best believe I would not be under a fluorescent light unless it was necessary and
I
real.
I mean, again, you know, facts.
Also,
no lies detected on that.
Has anyone yes. considered as a possible way to reduce vaccine hesitancy just getting better lighting? I mean, maybe more people would be eager to get vaccinated if they knew it would, like, be a better selfie than what they're currently faced with.
First of all, you should know using your news voice to make statements like that. Not cool.
Your news voice?
That was your news voice. I heard
that was
it.
My news voice.
All right, third and final quote.
Aww.
All right, we can stay and do five quotes this
yeah,
week. Why not?
Let's
will
do...
she be 3 for 3? Audie trying to take it all the way?
Okay, here. Y'all are going to get this one very quickly. Here's the quote. So many documentaries about me this year with other people's takes on my life. What can I say? I'm deeply flattered.
You
Who
can have
that?
This one, Ari.
I mean,
ooh.
Listen, options that I'm considering include Dolly Parton, The Tiger King.
What
you know
are
who
you?
This is? What?
Yeah, it's Britney Spears.
Okay.
Oh, my
okay.
God. You,
all
just,
right.
you said you're going to let him
three.
Have it.
There
wow.
she goes.
Audie's a blue. Audie is vicious.
Audie with the celebrity
she finally
facts.
Got to speak on her conservatorship, right?
Sorry, I've been busy hosting a two-hour
Ooh.
Daily program where we're covering
oh,
such important topics as intellectual property rights.
I think it's so cute when the junior host talk. It's like they really
wow.
bring such energy to it.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Britney said, y'all out here worrying about my well-being, but you know what? you don't know the story. And I love it.
You don't
it.
Know
I love
me.
That energy. Yeah. You don't yeah. know me.
So, you know, Britney Spears for years has been in this conservatorship in which her yeah. father basically controls her career and her money. And there were some documentaries this year that talked about that and talked about the ways in which the culture overall treated Britney Spears at the peak of her stardom not too nicely, in a way that was, in hindsight, pretty sexist. Mm-hmm. But she spoke out about those documentaries this week, of course, set to a video of her dancing in her house, saying, y'all don't know me. And this has become one of those stories where I feel like we've reached that level of meta commentary on commentary.
Exactly.
In which everything you say about it is right and wrong at the same time.
Well, the whole quote-unquote reframing of her story post Me Too and post in this like different feminist conversation also did not acknowledge that in a way this was yet another round of exploitation. Mm-hmm. That this really goosed the kind of like popularity of the documentary series of which it was a part of, and it drew eyeballs again, like, and clickbait and the conversation. And I think it's perfectly fair for her to say, I opt out of that.
You know who yeah. I think can really sympathize with that is Ben Affleck.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
I love a good callback. I love a good callback. Can we get a drum roll, please, as I announce the winner? The winner is all of our listeners, because this just was so aww. Fun for them to listen
aww,
to.
Oh, that's so no, sweet, actually, especially since won. It was me. Yeah, it was for sure me.
Let's give the woman some credit, the senior host of All Things Considered, Ms. Audie Cornish.
I know see, about all the things.
You really
particularly
do.
The celebrity gossip the tabloid things.
Don't
especially
try, you know,
those things.
The way I explain it is that we give all things equal weight. When it comes to cultural significance and discussion, all things should be approached in a smart and thoughtful way on our anniversary. That's what
yes.
it is.
I want to be yes. on the record as fully co-signing that.
On that note, happy birthday to NPR. Happy birthday to All Things Considered. And Adi and Ari, I look forward to the recurring pop culture and gossip segment on All Things Considered, because that has to happen.
Wait for it, because it's coming.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hi, Sam. Happy Friday. I'm so excited to share with you the best part of my week, finishing the spring semester of classes with straight A's.
Hi, Sam. After 3 years, a pregnancy, a birth, a global pandemic, and maintaining a full-time job, this Saturday, I am officially walking across the stage to graduate with my master's in school counseling. And I am so happy and proud of myself.
Hey, Sam. The best thing that happened to me this week was that my partner and I moved in together. She somehow turns moving furniture out of a third floor apartment into an absolute blast. And I'm so excited that now I get to wake up next to her every morning.
Hi, Sam. The good thing that happened to me this week is I completed my first ever marathon.
Just passed by a dead possum. I'm alone on the highway.
Your show helped me through most all my training runs, so I wanted to thank you.
Hi, Sam. The best part of my week was finding my cat, Millie. She ran out of my parents' house 2 weeks ago. I must have put up about 200 flyers, and I'm just so happy to have her back. And I look at her, and I can't believe that she's safe and here with me again.
Hi, Sam. The best part of my week has been my father visiting our family for the first time in a year, and the joy in everyone's face, namely my 7-year-old son, to be reunited with his grandpa. And in myself, too.
Hi, Sam. This is Jamie from Chicago. And the best part of my week was adoption court, where we adopted our son, Ruben.
Hello.
Hey, Ruben.
Ruben.
It was long awaited. We've had him for almost 4 years as a foster child. And now he is our son. Thanks for your show.
Thank you for the work that you do. We love the show.
Really love your show. Thank you for making it.
Thanks to all those listeners you heard there. Marin, Emily, Sean, Megan, Jasmine, Corinne, and Jamie. Listeners, don't forget you can be a part of this segment and send us your best thing at any point throughout any week. Just record yourself and send that voice memo to us via email, samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right, this week the show was produced by Andrea Gutierrez, Sylvie Douglas, Christina Kala, and Liam McBain. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. And our big boss is NPR's senior VP of programming, Anya Grundman. All right, listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. Find something to smile about. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
It's important to me that I come out on top.
Everyone always does this. Everyone always is like, oh, I'm ready for battle. And I'm like, y'all do know this is like a made-up quiz game on a public radio show.
I'm
with no
auditioning
prizes.
I consider this my audition to be the next host of Jeopardy. So I'm really...
Okay. Manifest. I love
me
it.
Me and Katie Couric, neck and neck.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me. And I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.